Welcome to Life in Debt, your practical debt education program. This is bankruptcy attorney Robert Liptak. I'm speaking from Crew LP 100.1 FM, the voice of Fairfield, Iowa, an award-winning, listener-supported, open-source grassroots community radio station broadcasting from the Cultural District in Fairfield. Please note that these presentations are provided as a public service for general information purposes only and are not intended to be legal opinions, legal advice, or complete discussions of any legal issues. Remember, every individual's factual situation is different, and you should seek independent legal advice from an attorney familiar with the laws of your state or locality regarding specific information. The name of this show is Life and Debt, and it is a weekly half-hour educational show looking at all types of issues related to debt as it influences your life. This show provides practical, general knowledge about what to look for regarding debt, what are traps and pitfalls, and what to do to be an educated debtor. It's useful to get some notebook, paper, and pen to take notes during the show. The next series of shows I'd like to embark upon is All Your Worth, The Ultimate Lifetime Money Plan, which I have spent time on years ago, but which I feel is something we need to revisit in light of the challenges in our economy. The book, All Your Worth, is by Elizabeth Warren, who most of you know about now. She is a senator from Massachusetts, the first female senator from that state. And she has been a very important person in dealing with many debt issues, credit card issues, and issues to help the middle class in particular at the governmental level in the last few years. But before that, as a writer and scholar, a professor at Harvard University. She has a number of books, and All Your Worth was written with her daughter, Amelia Warren Tiagi. What I will follow for the most part is her book, All Your Worth, as the textbook in this series. Continuing where we left off in the last show, we were talking about emotional spending. And here was the story. Kevin is tall and soft-spoken, with a habit of stooping as if he is trying not to stand out. Everyone calls him a nice guy, although most people would be surprised to learn just how messy his divorce was. His ex-wife placed the whole blame on him. He didn't appreciate her enough. He didn't know how to have fun. He was cold and dull. The fact that she installed a new boyfriend just 6 weeks later didn't take any of the sting out of her words. Kevin's sons liked the new man, and their cheerful chatter about how cool the new guy is and how he knows car stuff weighs heavily on Kevin. Kevin takes the boys every weekend, and he works hard to make each outing fun. They head for the Sharper Image and computer stores, movies every weekend, complete with tubs of popcorn and giant sodas, hours at the go-kart track, trips to Six Flags every month or two. The boys ask Kevin for everything they want, new bicycle helmets, backpacks, a basketball hoop, and Dad always says, sure. 10 months after the divorce, Kevin finally mustered up the courage to ask a pretty co-worker out for a movie. As they stepped up to the box office to buy tickets, he had to go through 3 credit cards before he could find one that wasn't over the limit. Mortified, he didn't say a word to his date through the entire movie. He took her home immediately afterward, and he didn't call back. When he came to see Elizabeth Warren and Amelia Tiagi, Kevin's hands shook as he kept smoothing out the credit card bills he laid on the table. He went through the math on his must-haves, which was okay, savings, he didn't have any, and wants, which were way over the limit. Kevin immediately started talking about how he doesn't see his boys much and how he wants them to have good memories, and they cut him off. Of course he loves his boys, but that's just not the point. So they helped Kevin work out his wants budget. It totaled up to about $140 a week, so he earmarked $120 for the weekends with his kids. They suggested he keep more back for clothes and dates, but this was Kevin's decision, not theirs. The following weekend, when he picked up the boys, Kevin showed them a stack of 12 $10 bills. The boys were impressed. It looked like a lot of money. Kevin explained that this was how much the three of them could spend for the weekend, and he wanted them to decide how to spend it. The boys were heady with power. They considered various possibilities, for the first time pausing to ask, "What would that cost, Dad?" During the entire weekend, Kevin never once said no. He just asked, "Is this really how you want to spend our money?" The trip to Sharper Image ended up as just looking when the boys realized that some of the gizmos would eat up their whole weekend allowance. Ultimately, they decided to rent a movie so they would have money for go-karts on Sunday afternoon. On Sunday evening, they blew the last of their money on a pizza with everything, calculating that they could afford extra cheese and extra sausage if they drank plain water. The boys were still laughing about their weekend when Kevin dropped them off. When they saw Kevin 2 months later, he looked 10 years younger. He said he had asked his co-worker out again, and she had, miraculously, said yes. The bigger miracle, however, is with his boys. He said that after a couple of weeks, the boys asked when they could go back to Six Flags. The three of them talked about the price, and they decided to start setting aside $40 from each weekend's allowance toward the expedition. Kevin also reported that the boys were getting much more interested in cheap fun, combing the papers to find a car club rally or an air show. Kevin saw the boys take more responsibility for the weekends now, and they are all having more fun. In essence, money is a funny thing. You earn it, you pay for your must-haves, and put something toward your future, and then the rest should be fun, right? And yet, there is money spent because you feel guilty. Money to make up for something, money to impress others, money to fight off feelings of sadness or anger or loneliness or disappointment. The point is, fun money isn't always fun. Money is deeply laden with symbolism and emotion. From the time your granddaddy pulled a quarter from behind your ear, love and money have been intertwined. And ever since punishment for breaking curfew was forfeiting a week's allowance, money has also been about power and punishment. People are still trying to fill in the holes left over from adolescence. Some feel so much defeat over a failed marriage and so much jealousy toward the replacement mate that they would blindly spend everything they have for a little relief. There are no magicians who can wave the wand to make all your emotional baggage disappear. But if you have a problem with emotional spending, then it could be costing you both money and happiness. Now that you're deep in wants territory, it's time to ask yourself whether you are really doing what you want or whether other demons lurk in your spending decisions. You don't have to dive into your unresolved hostility toward your third grade teacher, but finding financial peace means understanding something about why you spend your wants money the way you do. So now we're going to take a self-test on emotional spending. So get out a pen and paper. And you're going to respond with true or false to the following statements. I spend money when I get depressed or lonely. True or false? When people see me with nice things, they think more highly of me. True or false? I spend money to relax and relieve stress. True or false? I worry that people may not respect me as much if I don't have nice things. True or false? I often pick up the check when I am out with someone so that I look successful or generous. True or false? It takes a lot of money to look good. True or false? I spend a lot to make my friends and loved ones happy. True or false? It takes a lot of money to attract a date. True or false? Sometimes I am afraid to say no to spending money on someone I care about. True or false? I am sometimes ashamed or embarrassed by how much money I spend. True or false? My loved ones expect me to spend a lot of money for gifts at the holidays. True or false? And last, Sometimes I spend money on things I don't really want because it is expected of me. True or false? Now make a note of how many trues you have, and then I'll come back to this after a station identification. This is Iowa bankruptcy attorney Robert Liptak, and you are listening to Life and Debt, your debt education program. I'm speaking from Crew LP, 100.1 FM, the voice of Fairfield, Iowa, and beyond. Now back to the true and falses. If you marked true for two or more statements, you have a problem with emotional spending. It's time for a wake-up call. Emotions and money are deeply intertwined for you. Sorting through all of it can be very difficult because it may involve heading into some tough emotional terrain. You can do better, and you will feel better in the long run, once you develop the habit of separating these feelings from your decisions about how to spend your money. Whatever ails your heart cannot be fixed with money. If you are feeling unhappy, lonely, or insecure, those feelings will linger no matter how much you spend. Spending won't change your feelings about your spouse, your parents, your children, or yourself, and it won't make anyone love or respect you more. You cannot spend your way out of pain, but you can make every pain worse by trying to treat it with money. Difficulties with money will feed your emotional problems, which will only add more stress to your life. The origin of your problems may lie elsewhere, but out-of-control spending will make the emotional problems worse. Of course, you already know this. The hard part is figuring out what to do about it. The perfect answer is to solve the emotional problems head-on and to keep money out of it. But of course, this isn't a perfect world, and if you're like most people, you'll probably be a work in progress for many years to come. Which means you shouldn't have to wait to develop the insights of the ages before you get your spending under control. Here are a few practical steps you can make to get strong emotions out of the middle of your spending. 1. Identify where you're vulnerable. Take a look at your answers to the emotional spending questions that were just asked. Do you see a pattern? Is there a particular type of experience that triggers your emotional spending? To help with this, I'm going to go over the questions again. I spend money when I get depressed or lonely. Again, these are all true and false. When people see me with nice things, they think more highly of me. I spend money to relax and relieve stress. I worry that people may not respect me as much if I don't have nice things. I often pick up the check when I am out with someone so that I look successful or generous. It takes a lot of money to look good. I spend a lot to make my friends and loved ones happy. It takes a lot of money to attract a date. Sometimes I am afraid to say no to spending money on someone I care about. I am sometimes ashamed or embarrassed by how much money I spend. My loved ones expect me to spend a lot of money for gifts at the holidays. And last, sometimes I spend money on things I don't really want because it is expected of me. So with those true or false answers, do you see a pattern? Is there a particular type of experience that triggers your emotional spending? Maybe you spend when you feel certain emotions, or maybe you spend when you're around certain people. Identifying the exact moment when you are most vulnerable can help you take steps to protect yourself. As the story was started out with, for Kevin, it was weekends with his boys. So, he worked on finding a way to keep his money balanced during his vulnerable times, the weekends. For you, the solution may be to avoid the vulnerable situation altogether. Just stay away from the mall. Or don't go out with the buddies who expect you to pick up the tab. Or you may take Kevin's approach, set some clear limits, and stick with it. And you can give yourself a lean budget or a generous one, so long as you make sure to stop when you hit your limit. The second point is protect yourself from temptation. If you have a problem with emotional spending, throw out your credit cards. It may seem a little extreme about getting rid of credit cards. But as a bankruptcy attorney, I can talk about credit cards because I have seen people in a world of hurt over those little pieces of plastic. If you have a problem with emotional spending, you must cut up the cards. Right now, this minute. This may cause some anxiety because you may be using those cards as a crutch to support your emotional spending. But this may be the most important step you can take to improving your financial and your emotional well-being. Using credit cards for ordinary fun purchases is a bad idea for pretty much everyone. But if you are an emotional spender, a credit card in your wallet is just plain dangerous. It is a constant source of temptation whenever you feel a moment of weakness. Think of it this way. If you were trying to give up drinking, you wouldn't keep a bottle of booze on your kitchen table. If you were trying to quit smoking, you wouldn't keep a pack of cigarettes in your jacket pocket. And if you were trying to lose weight, you wouldn't carry a family pack of Twinkies in your backpack. It's the same here. If you are trying to get control of your emotional spending, don't carry temptation in your wallet. Throw it away. When Kevin cut up his credit cards, he had a much easier time keeping his boys within budget. Point 3 is get a little help. When you want to make important lifetime changes, you are far more likely to succeed if you have a circle of support to nurture and reaffirm those changes. So think about the people you are close to. Is there someone you can talk to about your emotional spending? The simple act of describing your struggles can help put them in perspective. And you may even get some more good ideas about how to solve them. There's no need to be a lone ranger. Reach out for a little help every now and then. Now, take one last look at your emotional spending self-test. There are dozens of variations on how people spend emotionally. Maybe you spend for others, or maybe you spend alone. Maybe money trickles out day after day, or maybe you go on a spending binge. The bottom line is the same. If you are spending emotionally, you're trying to fix something that money can never fix. And you may just find that those sticky emotional situations seem a lot less complicated when you take money out of it. So then, how do you share your fun money? Is it an evening at the game, or dinner, or a movie, cable TV, or book of the month club, a new winter coat, or a new table saw, shrubs for landscaping, or curtains for the dining room? These questions, or some variation of them, can bring even the happiest couple to blows, because sometimes what's fun for you is not fun for your mate, and vice versa. So how to solve it? Simple. Fun money for you and fun money for your partner. And then, and this is really important, no questions asked. Got that? No asking where the money went. No offering advice on how it should be spent. No justifying why you got a good deal. Think of it as your own personal don't ask, don't tell policy. But you may be saying, we're too broke for me to stand by while he or she blows our money on stupid stuff. It doesn't matter if you are trying to save every penny to buy a new house. It doesn't matter if you think that whatever your mate wants to blow money on is totally ridiculous and dumb beyond belief. Budget an amount you can afford purely for pleasure, and then just let it go. Because everyone needs fun money. Period. It may not be much, but no matter how tight the budget, there must be cash for both of you to spend on whatever you each want, no questions asked. Why? Because that's the best way to have fun with your fun money. No negotiating over every purchase, no second guessing each other, and no quarreling over silly little expenditures. It's like personal space. People have different needs, but everyone needs some. And I'll return to this after station identification. This is Iowa bankruptcy attorney Robert Liptak, and you are listening to Life and Debt, your debt education program. I'm speaking from Crew LP, 100.1 FM, the voice of Fairfield, Iowa, and beyond. The next question then is, should it be 50-50? Well, the answer is yes and no. If your entire relationship is 50-50, if you share the chores, the shopping, the child rearing, and everything else exactly equally, then go ahead and split your fun money right down the middle. But if things are a little lopsided, which is perfectly normal, then you need to divvy up the cash accordingly. So, for example, if you and your partner have kids, and one parent buys most of the birthday presents, happy meals, and new gadgets for the little ones, then that parent should get a larger share of the cash to cover those expenses. Likewise, if one spouse does most of the want shopping for both of you, buying a new set of sheets, picking up a pizza, getting Christmas gifts for the entire family, then he should get some extra cash. You may want to set up a cash drawer in the kitchen where you or your partner can grab money that is for the whole family, or you could split the money 50-50 and balance things out as you go. The method doesn't matter. The point here is to find a process for dividing the fun money that feels fair and a process that works for you. And to make sure, no matter what, every payday you each get a little cash to spend however you want. So, for example, Brandy and Brett are getting the hang of spending for fun. About 2 months after working out their balanced money plan, Brandy found a tiny pewter elephant on her pillow. Brandy had collected little elephant statues since high school, but she and Brett had been so strapped for money that she hadn't bought one since their honeymoon. They were still fighting their way out of debt, but they each had their own wants money, $20 a week. When Brandy saw the gift, her stomach did a flip-flop. Was Brett backsliding, spending money they didn't have? It wasn't her birthday. Was he losing his mind? After all, there was so much they still needed. But Brett was firm. You and I could spend my 20 bucks any way I want, and what I wanted was to do something nice for you. Brandy said, "That's when I knew we were going to make it. No matter what." Brett had crossed over. He had a good money plan, and he had stopped worrying and started living. Making room for fun. It's important. Your life is like a big blank canvas, and you can paint it with whatever colors you choose. The picture is yours, so enjoy your money. Making the most of your worth is about enjoying life, not thinking about money. The All Your Worth system lets you know how much you can spend on fun, leaving you free to spend it in any way you want. That can make life a lot easier, but it also means it is time to face head-on what spending makes sense for your life. You have a plan that helps you make conscious choices about your money, with no more sweeping everything into a confusion of gotta have it and can't afford it. You are in the driver's seat, so it's time to decide once and for all what you really want. This may be new territory for you, but if you have come this far, if you have worked through your must-haves and thought about your wants, then you have already moved a long way toward a lifetime of riches. You are ready for the real fun to begin. And so the next step is actually tackling your debt. You're going to build your future, but you have to pay off your past. The medical bills from last year's visit to the emergency room. The second mortgage you took out 4 years ago. The money you borrowed from Aunt Barbara that has been hanging out there for over a year. The credit card balance that has bounced around for more than a decade. You don't need a scrapbook. Your bills tell your history. If debt is a big part of your life, you may be wondering, why have we waited until now to tackle debts? Well, the answer is because now you know where the money to pay your debts will come from. If you followed all the shows or read All Your Worth this far, if you've taken the steps and gotten your money in balance, then you know exactly where to find the money to pay your debts. You have trimmed your must-haves to 50% or so, and you've set aside 30% for wants. That means you now have 20% of your income left over for saving for tomorrow. And that is where the money to pay your debts will come from, the money for your savings. You may be thinking, wait a minute, isn't that money supposed to go towards saving for the future? What does a 10-year-old Visa bill have to do with the future? Well, quite a lot. Your bills tell your past, but they also tell your future. Every debt, every monthly payment, every dollar you owe is a claim against your future. Debt affects what you can and cannot do about your future. And when you pay off the credit cards and IOUs, you open up new worlds of financial possibilities for yourself. You have more to spend, more to save, and a whole lot less to worry about. Paying for yesterday is perhaps the most important investment you can make in your future. Getting rid of those debts will buy you breathing room. It will buy a future of freedom, and it will bring your dreams, the things you really, really want, into reach. So whether you owe $200 to your Aunt Barbara or $2,000 to MasterCard or $20,000 to the Mayo Clinic, there is a way out of debt, a way to a brighter future. And this is what we will go into in the next few shows. But let's first look at how debt has swept the land. It's kind of like, I owe, it's off to work I go. That sounds familiar? For millions and millions of Americans, debt has become a way of life. Owing a bunch of money has become normal in this country, right up there with playing baseball in the summer and eating turkey on Thanksgiving. In fact, more than 80 million Americans owe money on a credit card. And not just a little bit of money. The average family that carries a balance owes more than 2 months' income on their credit card. And for some, it's a lot more than that. Maybe your grandparents told you that back in their day, if you couldn't pay cash, you didn't buy it. And that, frankly, was pretty much true. Debt just wasn't a routine part of American life the way it is today. A generation or two ago, almost no one carried a debt except for a home mortgage and maybe a car loan. There was no giant credit card balances, no payday loans, no home equity loans. In fact, just about 40 years ago, the total amount of debt outstanding among all American households was about 1/600th of what it is today. That means that for every dollar your generation owes today, your parents' generation owed less than half a penny. So how did many people wind up in the hole? Well, over the past generation, American families got hit by a 1-2 debt punch. The first punch came when the laws were changed in the late 1970s. That's when, perhaps your parents were young, they had to pay cash for what they wanted because there just weren't any credit cards for regular middle-class people. Why not? It's not because everyone was just so prudent that no one would have wanted a credit card, nor is it that no one had invented the credit card. In fact, credit cards first appeared more than 90 years ago. The real reason that your parents didn't lay down a MasterCard every time they wanted something was because the laws were different. When your parents were young, interest rates were regulated by law, which meant that credit card companies could make money only if everyone paid them back. In other words, because the companies didn't charge a lot for interest, they needed to screen their customers very carefully to be sure they could repay. And we will continue this story in the next show. This is Iowa bankruptcy attorney Robert Liptak, and you have been listening to Life and Debt, your debt education program. If you have any questions or comments, call the station at 641 609-1083, or you can email me at lifeanddebt@gmail.com. I'm speaking from Crew LP 100.1 FM, the voice of Fairfield, Iowa. May you enjoy and have a healthy and prosperous debt manageable life.